12A1. Okay, we are 6 lines in the top of the page. Okay. Yud Beis Amid Aleph, 6 lines in the top of the page. Okay, In the Mishnah was discussing what happens if they finish they paskin that the guy killed somebody and the Kohen Gadol died. So remember, we learned if there was no Kohen Gadol, he stays there forever. If there was a Kohen Gadol, he goes out. So now the Gemara says as follows. Amid Rav Yehuda, Amid Rav Yehuda said the name of Rav. Shtei Toiz To Yoyev Ba'is Yishot. What happened was as follows. Yoyev, who is David HaMelech's chief of staff, basically, who was a very great person, but at one time made a big mistake, and he killed two people, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter. Okay, so this person, Yoyev, killed two people. David HaMelech was very upset with him, and David HaMelech, before he died, told Shlomo HaMelech, you have to kill Yoyev for doing what he did. That's the story in Tanakh. The David HaMelech said to Shlomo HaMelech, when you become king, David HaMelech didn't want to kill him. So he said to Shlomo HaMelech, when you become king, you have to kill him. So Shlomo HaMelech sent his chief of staff, Ben Yehoyada, to go kill Yoyev. So what did Yoyev do? The story is he ran away to the Mizbeach, and he held on to the Mizbeach because he maintained that this is going to save him from being killed. They're holding on to the Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Merav, Shtei Toiz To Yoyev Ba'is Yishot. Yoyev made two mistakes. He thought he was going to be saved by holding on to the Mizbeach. He made two mistakes. What were the two mistakes? Tichziv, because it says in the Pasuk, Vayonis Yoyev, Yoyev ran away, El Eyal Hashem to the Mishkan. They didn't have a Beis HaMikdash yet in those days. Vayachzik Bekanis HaMizbeach, and he grabbed on to the horns of the Mizbeach. Now, what did he hope? He hoped that by holding onto the Mizbeach, he's not going to get killed. We made a mistake. She'ein ha'keilet ala gagay. It's only the Mizbeach's roof protects the person. V'hutaf is pekanaisa, but he only grabbed onto the horns of the Mizbeach, not the roof of the Mizbeach. So that was one mistake he made. And secondly, the only thing that is like Ari Miklat that protects you is the Mizbeach of the Beis HaMikdash. And he held on to the temporary Mizbeach of Shilai. Meaning as follows. When the Jews came into Eretz Yisrael, they had various Mishkans. Like in the Mishkan in the desert, then they built in various cities. And finally, the longest Mishkan was in Shilai. There was Mishkan Shilai. So, even though it says Shilai was destroyed already, but the Mizbeach was still there. And he grabbed on to the Mizbeach. But what he didn't realize is this Mizbeach wouldn't help him. It only had to be the Mizbeach of the permanent Beis HaMikdash, which was a permanent Mizbeach. That would protect you. Number two, he held on to the horns of the Mizbeach, which were the things that protruded from the corners. And the only thing that protects you is the actual roof of the Mizbeach. And Abaye adds another point. Boha nami mitata, he made a mistake in the third thing. Why? The only way the Mizbeach protects you is if you're a Kohen while you're doing Aveda. But who's Arhaya? He wasn't a Kohen, he was a Yisrael. So again, the Mizbeach wouldn't protect him. Okay. And then the Gemara continues in a similar concept of people making mistakes. Amir Ishlakish, Ishlakish says, Shalish Toyus of Asit Sadi Shalaremi Litis. The angel of Rome, which is known as the officer of Rome, because each nation has their Malach in heaven. Like we know, when Yaakov Avinu fought with the Malach, Rashi says, who was that angel Yaakov Avinu fought with? Esav's Malach was the Malach, the Sad, that's in charge of Esav, which basically is the country of Rome. The Romans are called in Halach, in Torah, Esav. So he says, the Sad of Esav is going to make three mistakes. Why? It says as follows. It says at the end of days, Hashem is going to punish Esav for punishing the Jews. I mean, we're in Golus of Edom, of Esav. So it says when Mashiach comes, Hashem's going to punish Esav. I mean, he's going to punish the Malach from the angel down. So it says the Malach is going to run away to Batsra. Because he thinks it's one of the Ari Miklat. And the guy is going to say, it's Betzer is an Ari Miklat, not Batsra. But he's going to run to Batsra. Yeah, this is, by the way, these are all similar. It could be it's the same cities, even. He says, so what's going to be as follows. The Chassid says in Yeshaya, Mizah ba me'adim hu kam se'me'adim chomutz begadim mi batzra. Garment stained with the angel, the blood of the angel of Esav from Batsra. Meaning, Toya, the Malach is going to make a mistake. Shein ekalat es alebetzer. The real Ari Miklat, when the Torah enumerates the names of the Ari Miklat, one of them is Betzer. But he went to Batsra. He thought it's the same city, but it's not the same city. One is Betzer, one is Batsra. Another mistake is Teya Shein ekalat es alesheigik. The really Ari Miklat only protects a person who kills somebody accidentally. The Esav did it intentionally. It wouldn't help him anyway. And the third thing is Taya, and the third mistake he makes is Shein ekalat es ala adam. It only protects a person. And he's a malach. He's an angel. So number one, he had the wrong city, the wrong person, and the wrong intent. He was a malach who did it intentionally, he ran to the wrong city. So Gemara says he's going to make three mistakes in the future.
But it's not the angel that's doing all the killing, it's the people, isn't it? It's not the angel that's doing all the killing of the Jewish people.
Yeah, but still it's considered the angel. He's in charge of whatever goes on there. He's in charge of whatever goes on. So if he's in charge of whatever goes on, so he's to blame.
What about the people of Esau? I mean, they're
doing... Debish is going to punch them too.
This Golos is called Golos Edom. They were the Romans, right?
Yeah, that's Esav.
Those descendants.
Esav who Edom, the Pasuk says.
Because he was born red. I mean, it's called.
Good, but I'm saying.
Those Romans were descendants of Esav.
Rome is the descendant of Esav, sure.
Not yet.
Italia Shel Yovan literally means the Italy of Greek, but it means Italy. Mm-hmm. Italia Shel Yovan. That's one of the Mishmani artists here, Meshevecha, that Hashem gave him the best of the properties. It's one of the reasons why we use Italian Esregim rather than Israeli Esregim in our custom, is because it's Mishmani artists from the best places of the earth, the Torah says. It's one of the reasons. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amr Rababu, Rababu says an interesting halacha, Ari Miklat Leinitnu Lekvura. The city's a refuge, you're not allowed to have people buried there. You're not allowed to bury people in the city's a refuge. Why? Because the Chziv, it says in the Pasuk, that means even the Levim, who live in the city's a refuge, if they die, they cannot have a cemetery and be buried in those cities. Why? Sigmar learns it out from a Pasuk. The Chziv, because it says in the Pasuk, Migrashayhem, when they're open areas, Yulabahemtam will be for their animals, for the chushim and for their properties, Ulachochayasim and all their animals. Now, the Gemara learns Ulachochayasam simply means for all your animals. But the Gemara is learning it Lachayasam meaning when you're alive, Nitnu. Lachayasam when you're alive, then you have the city. But when you're dead, you can't be in the city. So the Babu says that Ari Miklat is nobody was allowed to be buried in the Ari Miklat. Now the Gemara is going to ask a question from a Gemara we learned already, that it says a page ago we learned that the guy that ran to the city refuge has to be buried there, and then you take him out after the Kohen Gadol dies, but he has to be buried. The Gemara is going to ask that right away. Anyway, by the way, there's one more din that I may have to discuss if it's relevant to the next piece of Gemara also. In the Torah, there was a law of the city had to be a certain size, and then there had to be 1,000 amos, 1,000 cubits outside the city, empty space. It had to be empty space outside the city. And the Torah says, Madosa mechutz leir elef amma migrash. It has to be 1,000 amma of migrash, of empty space outside of a city. So the Torah says about the Ari Miklot, that the Levim get migrasham, the open places outside the city should be for the animals, you know, to graze or whatever it is. No, it was to beautify the city, that the animals should have place to be and just for the beauty of the
also
city.
When they got to that point, they were safe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll see that in the next piece of Gemara.
You can go up to 2,000 animals, right?
The Gemara asks the Stira, one pasuk says 1,000, one says pasuk 2. The Gemara answers the Rashi calls it the Chumash. Okay, v'leilu kfura, you're not allowed to be buried in the city of refuge. So the Gemara says, Macy, I'll ask you a question. We just got through learning that Shamtei Kedirasi. Over there is where the killer has to live. Shamtei Misasi, that's where he should die. Shamtei Kvurasin, that's where he has to be buried. So the Gemara says, what do you mean nobody's allowed to be buried in Nari Miklat? When it says clearly that the murderer who ran to the city of refuge to be protected is buried there. Then it says, remember we learned, when the Kohen Gadol dies, then you take the body out, back to the family plot. But during the time the Kohen Gadol is alive, the guy is buried in Nari Miklat. So how can you say nobody's allowed to be buried in Nari Miklat? So the Gemara answers, you're right. Ritzeach Shani. The murderer Taki is different. That means the Torah says normal people like the Levim who live there were not allowed to be buried in Nari Miklat. But the murderer is an exceptional case, and the Torah says the murderer has to be buried in Nari Miklat. So that was a unique situation, so to speak. Okay, and the Mefashim explained very simply. When the person was the murderer, part of his kapara was to be in the Ari Miklat, both when he was alive and when he died, until the Kohen Gadol died. Like the Gemara says, the Kohen Gadol's death is what forgives him. So until the Kohen Gadol dies, the guy has to be in the city of refuge. If he's alive, he's alive. If he's dead, he has to be there. So that's part of the process of Ari Miklat. But a Levi who happened just to live in the Ari Miklat, or any other Jew that could have lived there, they're not allowed to be buried in Ari Miklat.
Oh, could it be because those murderers are buried there?
No. It's just Exeris HaKosuv. The Torah says it was given to the Levium during their lifetime, and not when they died. That was what the Gemara answers. So it's really not, it's not necessarily logical.
Are you allowed to carry a body through there? Like carry a dead body through this place?
Okay, yeah. I don't see why not.
Not bury,
yeah, because then he's permanent. Mm-hmm. There was a guy once from a mortuary. It's a true story. He went to pick up a body from New York to Connecticut. The body was in Connecticut. He had to bring it back from Connecticut, a dead body, back to New York. So on the way, he stopped by somebody's house that he knew for a cup of coffee. It was at night, you know. So the guy said, I have to be going. I have somebody in the car. So the host says, call him in. What, is he sitting in the car like this? Call him in. He says, I can't call him in. He played around with them for 10 minutes. He finally says, it's a dead body.
Someone's house?
Why not? You're not allowed to eat in the presence of a dead body.
Yeah.
Halacha says.
But you're not supposed to leave him alone?
Yeah, but it was in the car. He needed to get something to drink. I mean, it wasn't.
What are you talking about? Why do you think that's not right?
You mean the dead body's wasting time? What's the problem?
Oh, he has to get him back to the city.
So they got him back. The burial was the next day. Don't worry about it.
He had to get a cup of coffee.
By the way, the only thing you're not allowed to do, Halacha says, you're not allowed to eat in the presence of a dead body. You're not allowed to smoke a cigarette in the presence of a dead body. You know, but that's anyway because it's showing
disrespect.
But outside, like a person that washes bodies at night can go out for a cup of coffee and a drink or whatever.
But
they have somebody sitting there all night and
a shaman. They're supposed to. If you hire
you're
a guy,
you're not supposed to leave him alone.
No, I don't want to talk about morbid dead things. But the reason why you need to watch a body at night is two reasons in halacha. One is because of rats and mice, because a dead body can be attacked by, don't forget, it's not like today. In the olden times, there were rats all over the place. And a dead body is a target for rats. So if a person's there, the rat would be afraid to come into the room. And another opinion is simply out of respect, you know, not to leave a dead body alone. It's not respectful. But the real reason you should know is because of the rats. Allah says.
On a more positive note, why can't a chatan and a kala be left alone?
That's because it's just such a holy thing. The devils like to get in the way of things.
I know.
Like a bris, the night before bris, the father's up all night. Supposed to be up all night. Because such an important, yeah. Except Friday night, says you don't have to because Shabbos itself protects.
What are you doing anyway?
Huh? Most people do it anyway.
Isn't that one of the reasons why you don't give a dead body to protect it from the?
No, there's a problem with rats and eating it up because then it's disrespectful, Mom. You can eat it up.
That's it.
Yep.
He's dead and mice, but
yeah, that's right. Okay, then the Gemara continues and says, "Shem she'ir keletes." The Mishnah said the following: Din, just like the city protects the person, so the boundaries of the city also protect the person. Now we know Tchum Shabbos, right? You're allowed to go 2,000 cubits outside the city. That's called the boundary of the city. So the Mishnah is saying, a din, that not only does the city itself protect the murderer, but 2,000 amis outside of the city also protect the murderer. That means if he once gets into the 2,000 amis close to the city, it already becomes Ari Miklat. So the Gemara says, Ramino, I'll ask you a question. It says in the Braise, V'yoshevba, that the murderer who killed accidentally, yeah, has to sit in the Ari Miklat. It says, Ba volei betchuma. In it and not in the boundaries. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. You're telling me the boundaries of 2,000 amis are part of the Ari Miklat that protects the person, and here it says he's not allowed to live in the boundaries. He can only live in the city itself. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Abaye says Likasha. It's two different things. Kan Liklat, Kan Lodur. One is speaking about living. He has to live in the city. But protection, the protection is up to 2,000 amis. In other words, if you're talking about the Yosheba, he should live in the city. He has to live in the city proper. But as far as protecting him, once he gets into the 2,000 amis of the city, it protects him. So the Gemara says, Lodur, what do you mean he can't live? We know already from a different pasuk he can't live. Why? Because the ein is in sada migrish le migrish sada. The din is, you're not allowed to make a field into an open area, and you're not allowed to make an open area into a field. And it says, Le-migrish ir, you're not allowed to make an open area city, Le-ir-migrish, and you can't make a city an open area. Meaning, when the Torah gives, in the times of the Eretz Yisrael, the Torah says as follows, there was a city, 1,000 amis outside of the city were for fields, and 1,000 amis outside of that were open areas. So any city in Eretz Yisrael had three sections, the city proper, the fields outside the city, and then an open area outside of that. Okay? The city was as big as it was, with different sizes. The fields were 1,000 amis. That means all around the circumference of the city. But it was for 1,000 amis, like 1,500 feet of field area, and then another 1,500 feet of open area. And the Gemara learns out from these psukim, each area had to be what it was. You couldn't make city open. You couldn't make field open. You can't make open field. You can't make open city. City is city. Open is open. And field is field. So the Gemara is asking, I already know that you can't live in the boundaries. You have to live only in the city. So why does it say here, V'yoshev ba, that he has to live in here? Which implies that he's only protected when he's in the city itself, not in the tchum of the city, not in the boundaries of the city. So the Gemara says, "Amar of Sheshes, leinistracha, ela lemchilas." It's interesting. In the olden times, they used to build underground tunnels that were open to the city, and then they went underneath the open area, in the ground. So over there you're allowed to live, in the tunnels. Because it didn't take away from the open area. In other words, the Torah says, I want open area, I want fields. I don't want you living there, because then it's not open. But the Gemara says, if it's an underground tunnel, you can live underneath the open areas. It's like the, you know, people used to live there. There was on today in the news that there was a kid, and not again, he's a 21 years, an Iraqi kid, person. Saddam Hussein said to kill him, and he ran away to his parents' house in Baghdad. And he was living for 21 years in a narrow passageway in his parents' house between two walls. That's where he lived. And now that Saddam is dead, he came out into the open. Let's turn the radio.
Saddam is dead?
Huh?
He's on those cable shows.
No, CBS.
CBS?
Yeah. I don't listen to that junk.
Saddam is dead?
No, but Saddam is powerless. So, but he's living for 20 years in a narrow, that's what they said, in a narrow passage between two walls, and what he did a whole day was listen to the radio and read books. Because he was afraid Saddam said to kill him. Okay. Then the Gemara says, okay. Then the next piece of Gemara says the following din. That Ritzeach Shiyotza Chutz L'Tchum, that a murderer that left the city. Okay, the murderer ran into Ari Miklat and then decided to take a stroll outside. So the din is, Tan Rabban alert. V'ratzach Geil Adam Eser Itzeach, the Geil Adam, by the avenger, the family member can kill him. Mitzvah B'yad Geil Adam. This is what Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to say. But basically, we learned a little bit of this in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi Aglili said that the Geil Adam has a mitzvah to kill him, and everybody else is allowed to kill him. That's what Rabbi Yossi Aglili said. Rabbi Kiva said, no, only the Geil Adam could kill him, and everybody else is not allowed to kill him. That's what the Mishnah had the argument. Now the Brice is elaborating on these two opinions. It says, Tan Rabban learned, V'ratzach Geil Adam es Ritzeach, the Geil Adam has to kill the murderer. So it says, Mitzvah B'yad Geil Adam. The mitzvah is the Geil Adam should kill him. The family member should kill him. Ein Geil Adam, what happens if there's no family member? That means the guy died, no kids and no relatives, whatever. Rishus B'yad Kol Adam, whoever wants could kill him. Divide Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says anybody that wants could kill him.
Does that mean people even in the Ari Miklat?
No. Once he's in Ari Miklat, he can. It says that when he goes out. Now, Rabbi Kiva Aymer, no. Roshuz biyad girl adam, the girl adam has permission to do it. Ve'echol adam chayav en olav. If anybody else kills him, they get killed. Because they're murderers. They don't have permission to kill him, according to Rabbi Kiva. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, anybody who wants can kill him. Okay? So the Gemara says, my time with Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Why does Rabbi Yossi Aglili say it's a mitzvah to kill him? The girl Adam is a mitzvah to kill him. So he says, because the Pasuk says as follows, V'ratzach girl Adam. Ratzach girl Adam means he kills him. It doesn't say, im ratzach, if he killed him. What does the Pasuk say? The Geil Adam kills him. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, what does the Pasuk mean? He has to kill him. Because if the Torah says he could kill him, the Torah should have said, if he kills him. The Torah says he kills him, which means it's a mitzvah to kill him. But Rabbi Kiva says, Miksiv Yirtzach, does it say he should kill? He says he did kill. But there's no mitzvah to kill him. Okay? Now, here's an interesting third opinion. Amr Mazuta Bartov Yamarav. Retzeach Shiyotu Chutz L'Tchum. If the Retzeach went outside of the Ari Miklat, Umatza Girl Adam and the relative found him and killed him, Nerag Olav, he gets killed. It's a remarkable opinion. I was going to explain what it means. But this opinion says b'chlal a new strange thing, that if the murderer wandered out of the Ari Miklat and the avenger, the relative, killed him, he gets killed by Bezdin for killing him. He had no right to kill him. So the Gemara says, who does he hold like? It's not Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says it's a mitzvah to kill him. Rabbi Kiva says, if you want, you could kill him. He says, no, you can't kill him. So he says, who the Amar ki hai Tana? He holds like another Tana. Why? The Tanya says in the Braise as follows. Rabbi Yezer says, and de lifnei ha'ed ala mishpat. It says, the murderer shall not die until he goes to Bezdin. That means Bezdin has to try him to see if he's guilty or innocent. The feast, he says, why does it say that? The feast shenemar. Because the Pasuk already says, Rotzach gil adam esereteach, that the relative can kill the murderer. So I would think, Yochel miyad, that he can kill him right away. The second it happens, he can kill him. So the Gemara says, no. Talmud leimer an amde lefnei ha'ed ala mishpat. He has to go to court. Which means that you can't kill him until he went to court and was warned. Okay? So therefore, Rabbi Lezer says, in Marzutra's case, the Gemara is interpreting it now, if the murderer wasn't tried yet, that means if he wasn't tried yet, and he went out of the city of refuge, you can't kill him. That's what Marzutra holds. And he holds like Rabbi Lezer.
What page are you on here?
By you it's 12:82.
12:82.
Closer to the end.
12:8.
You got different books?
Well, we're the same books, but different pages.
Maybe.
Two pages ahead of you. Same thing, though.
Fine with me.
In the Hebrew, it's the same.
He can't kill him, period, right? If he hasn't been convicted, how could he kill him?
No, but the question is, if somebody saw... there are two brothers, yeah? One was underneath the ladder, and one was 10 feet away. And the brother... was 10 feet away. It's Reuven and Shimon, yeah? Shimon's under a ladder. Reuven's standing 10 feet away. Yankel comes down from a ladder, falls on Shimon's head and kills him. So Reuven saw it happen, right? Can he just kill him now?
Without a trial.
Yeah. So the Beloza says, you can't kill him. You can only kill him after he was warned that he's an accidental murderer and he has to be in the city of refuge.
The other says he could do it without a trial?
We don't know if they argue, but Pashtis, yeah, that they could kill him right away.
Why does he have to be warned? Doesn't he know he's an accidental murderer?
Because the Pasuk says until he stands for trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but isn't it? The fact, I was going to ask, what does Rabbi Yossi Aglili and Rabbi Kiva learn from that Pasuk? But Rabbi Lazar says, the Torah says, until he stands in trial. That's it.
But isn't it obvious that he's an accidental murderer?
No.
Huh? I mean, he fell on the guy and killed him. It's pretty obvious.
So until, but that's what he said. Until Bezdin says, oh, I'll give you another example where this difference would be. What happens if the guy ran away, he killed somebody accidentally, he ran to the city of refuge. So he's protected meanwhile, right? Now Bezdin has to take him back for trial, to Bezdin. Mm-hmm. So he's going out of the city to go back to court. Can the girl Adam kill him or not? So according to Rabbi Kiva, he could kill him. According to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, he has a mitzvah to kill him. And according to Rabbi Lazi, he can't kill him because he didn't stand trial yet.
Isn't the
Bezdin
in the
R? No. I mean, not necessarily. To kill somebody, you need a Bezdin 23. Only the big, you know, certain cities are 23. Every city had a Bezdin of 3. But not all cities had a Bezdin of 23.
Are all capital cases...
23. In Torah law, all capital punishment cases needed minimum of 23.
But I thought that we learned before that the Din sent some people that advised him not to kill him.
Right. That's according to Rabbi Kiva. But according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, he has a mitzvah to kill him. Peasant's not going to tell him, don't kill him. The guy's a mitzvah to kill him.
Yeah,
So the Gemara is speaking according to Rabbi Kiva's opinion, because that's the halacha anyway, like Rabbi Kiva. Right? The halacha like Rabbi Kiva, that he could kill him. Not that he has a mitzvah to kill him. So the Bezin would tell him, you know, oh, don't do it. But according to Rabbi Yisrael Glili, Taka Bezin couldn't send messages to tell him not to kill him because he has a mitzvah to kill him. Then he would have to kill him.
So it's like Rabbi Kiva, so if somebody else killed him, he would be fired?
Yep. That's only in a regular court case. In a regular court case, you have to try to find the merit. Right? But in the case of accidental murder, the relative is allowed to kill him. Not allowed. Basically, it's a mitzvah. Because he says, the Gemara that we just learned, the Gemara says, it doesn't say if he killed him, he should kill him, the Pasuk says. So it's a mitzvah to kill him. The Pasuk says he kills him. The question is, the Torah doesn't say he should kill him, but the Torah doesn't say if he killed him. So Rabbi Yisrael clearly learned it's a mitzvah to kill him. Rabbi Kiva says, no, it's not a mitzvah to kill him.
So in this way, the Shogeg is more severe than the thief.
Correct. The Gemara is going to talk about this in the next page. The Gemara is going to say, Elochayim, in a certain case, the Gemara is going to say that in a certain case, Shaygig is even stricter than Mazid.
Why? Why?
We'll see in the Gemara.
The Shaygig is mitzvah to keep it. Mazid, you should find a merit for him not to keep it.
Why find a merit not to keep it?
Vitzilo Eida.
That's only by Mazid?
Yeah. According to Rabbi Yisrael, it's a mitzvah to kill him, the Goyal Adam. But it's also only the Goyal Adam, it's not anybody else. Bezdin has an obligation to find the merit. The Goyal Adam doesn't have to. The what?
It's the same. It's the
Goyal Adam by Mazid, Bezdin killed him.
But the Goyal Adam killed him too?
I don't know if it's by Mazid also.
And a kosher killed by Mazid?
No, not necessarily. Maybe over there Bezdin kills him, let Bezdin do it. But over here, Bezin can't kill him. I'll give you an example. It's not about this din. If somebody commits adultery, yeah, could somebody go kill him? No. No. That's only a Berel Aramis.
It's not a kosher king?
No, that's what I'm saying, no. If somebody sees a man living with a married woman, adultery, yeah, he cannot kill him in the act. But if somebody's living with a shiksa, like the Pinchas story, he can kill him during the act. Right? A Berel Aramis Bezin can't kill you. So therefore the Torah says, if you're zealous, you can kill him. But a case where Bezin kills him, who are you mixing it to Bezin for? Who are you to kill him? It's possible the Berel Adam can only kill him if it's b'shogeg. If it's b'mezid, let Bezin deal with it. What do you know... Who are you to mix into Bezdin? In a case where Bezdin can't do it, because the guy killed somebody accidentally, Bezdin doesn't kill him for killing somebody accidentally, so the Torah says, if you're a relative, you have a right to kill him. Kondra basically, let mitzvah to kill him. Besides the fact that in ancient Minadin, you can't give punishment from a Kal V'chomer. Because maybe the Kal V'chomer is wrong, you don't know.
One witness is sufficient to kill somebody?
I'm sorry?
One witness is enough
no.
to kill somebody?
No, not in Torah law. For a goy, yeah, you need two witnesses. DNA is not good. In Torah law, if you can prove with DNA that the guy killed somebody, you don't kill him. You have 100 witnesses and 2 of them happen to be relatives, you can't kill them. All 100 are no good. The only way it works in Torah law is if there's 2 kosher witnesses, period. That's it.
And you still need to go to Bezdin?
Yeah. Because only Bezdin can kill him. Only Bezdin can kill him. In fact, we're going to learn later in the Gemara the concept that if a father has to get killed, the son's not allowed to be the member of Bezdin to kill him. Or if a father needed, say somebody's father ate chazer, so the Bezdin is going to give him malchus. Yeah, the son can't be the shliach of Bezdin to whip his father. It has to be somebody else.
But if a koi doesn't keep Shiva Mrs. Menino off,
he gets killed.
By the Bezdin or
Bezdin?
Can anyone kill him?
No, Bezdin.
Bezdin.
Yeah.
So
but over there, one witness is enough.
So when Shimon and Levi killed out the city of Shechem, were they acting as a Bezdin?
Yeah, they maintained they were a Bezdin. Yaakov Avinu said no, but they maintained they were a Bezdin. Yeah.
The case where there's 102 of them become possible, could, like, let's say 50 of them come back again and testify? Or are they possible?
They have to come as a separate group. But once they came, it's over.
Right, but could anyone else testify about it? Not no one out of the 100.
Yeah. Yeah. But if the 100 came as one group, they're all no good. If two of them are relatives. That's why the halacha is, if two relatives saw a murder, what do? They just stay home. One of them goes and the other one stays home. He doesn't go to Bezdin.
One should testify?
Yeah, why not? Because there might be a second witness from somebody else. If Moshe and Aaron went for a walk and they saw a murder, so they're brothers, right? So they can't be kosher witnesses. So, I don't know, Aaron stays home and Moshe goes, or Moshe stays home and Aaron goes, whatever. But if they both go, you kill the whole thing. There's no testimony.
But how can one witness go in and testify?
Because maybe there'll be another witness coming.
No, but
if you saw a murder, not now, I mean the time of the Beis HaMikdash, right. Yeah, if you saw a murder, you had an obligation to go to Bezdin. You can't say, oh, I'm only one witness, I'm not going to do anything anyway. That's not your business. There might be a second witness that saw it too.
No, but if I saw with my brother, if I was there with a relative.
Yeah, so one of you goes, one of you don't go.
Right, then it's only going to be me going. So
right.
But you need two witnesses.
But I'm saying maybe there'll be another person coming.
Oh, okay. But what if there is not, and I can't do it?
That's God's business. What happens if somebody gets away with murder and there are no witnesses? That's what God wanted, obviously.
No, but according to halacha, you can't just have one witness go in, if there was no other witnesses.
You go in, but you don't have the validity. The person's not going to act on it. Uh-huh. In monetary things, they do act on one witness, a little bit. They make him swear. But in capital punishment, or if one guy says, I saw Reuven eat chazer, you know, Bezin's not going to whip him. But if Reuven saw Yankel eating chazer, he has to go to Bezdin to testify, I saw Yankel eating chazer. Because maybe a second witness. But the Mishnah in Sanhedrin says they have to see each other, the witnesses, or could see each other, whatever, you know.
What about if there is a different witness on a different location with the same guy?
No good.
Has to be the same guy.
You mean a guy says, I saw Reuven eat chazer Monday, and another guy says, I saw me Tuesday? No. That's one witness for each. You need two witnesses on Monday and two witnesses on Tuesday. Yeah, sure, you can't. Yeah, by certain times, one witness is kosher. And like we learned, it doesn't even have to be a kosher witness. What do you mean? You go home and eat dinner? Yeah? Yeah. How do you know the food in your house is kosher?
Trust your wife.
Huh? You trust your wife. Since when is she a kosher witness? So the din is Eid Echad Nemen Bisurin. When it comes to Isur and Heter, one witness is believed, even if they're not halachically kosher witness. Mm-hmm. How do you have a mashgiach in a restaurant, a mashgiach in a butcher store, yeah? It's one guy. Don't you need two witnesses? What does a mashgiach do, basically? He testifies that it's kosher, right? That's what a mashgiach is. He's testifying the food is kosher. Ah, you need two witnesses to testify. What is one guy doing? So the answer is, when it comes to kosher and treif, isur and heter, one witness is enough.
This one,
and even if they're not a kosher witness.
This is mashgiach in every restaurant?
There's supposed to be or there is?
I'm asking.
It depends. There's supposed to be. Depends if the owner is Shemesh Shabbos. If he's not Shemesh. I don't know anything about any restaurants, but I'm just telling you that if the owner is Shemesh Shabbos, they don't demand necessarily a Mashgiach Tamidi. A constant Mashgiach. Though again, it goes into the whole thing. What, you know. But the we're going off the topic. The concept of a hashgach is the guy is testifying that the food is kosher. A guy goes home to eat dinner, his wife or his mother, whatever it is, says to him, here, eat the food. So she's basically telling you it's kosher. Right? Yeah. So, of course, how do you trust her? She's only one witness.
No, I just hope to believe her. Just hope she's right.
Not hope you. I'll be then. You believe her.
If you don't believe her, then what's the point? Unless you go shop at Ralph's, and Ralph's chicken is as good as, basically, cheaper and better.
How do you know what I ate?
I know.
That's a different story. If you have reason to suspect, you have reason to suspect. That's only Chumash Chumayt Alav Sefer. It's not. It's a different thing completely. Okay. Anyway, so now the Gemara says. So Rabbi Lezer says that until the guy goes to court, ad amdu lefnei ha'eda lemishpat, you can't kill him. So now the Gemara asks the Rabbi Yisri, Rabbi Kiva, I amdu lefnei ha'eda lemishpat, my daughter's bay. What do they do with that pasuk until you go to court? So he says they learn it because it's telling you something else. He says, Rabbi Kiva Eimer, Rabbi Kiva says, Minayin l'sanhedin shiro echot shaharig asanefesh. How do I know that a bezdin that saw somebody kill somebody, she'ein ma'amintin eisei. Bezdin can't kill him. Achiyamid bebezdin acher. Until they go to another bezdin. In other words, the question is like this. What happens if a bezdin was going out for a walk and bezdin saw Reuven kill Shimon? They saw him kill Shimon. Can they kill him? No. He has to go to another bezdin. How do we know? Because it says in the pasuk, "Ad om de lefnei o'eda lamishpat," meaning "Achiyamid bebezdin acher." He has to go to another bezdin, meaning he has to be tried, and it has to be according to many rishonim, taka separate bezdin. Another bezdin, they can't be the ones. Right. Yes, sir.
Could two brothers that got separated because the parents got divorced, could they testify together?
They're still brothers. Once a brother, always a brother. The only thing I'll tell you when they could. No. If no, two brothers-in-law. Then they could technically testify, you're right.
Should they?
They could, that's not a problem. If Reuven and Shimon married two sisters, Rachel and Leah. Okay, Rachel and Leah are two sisters, Reuven and Shimon. I mean, Reuven and Shimon are two guys, and they married Rachel and Leah, right? Two sisters. So they was called brothers-in-law, right? Mm-hmm. Brothers-in-law are not kosher witnesses, right? But what happens if they got divorced? One of them got divorced. She's not a brother-in-law anymore. She can testify. But if he was a brother-in-law when he saw it, and then they got divorced, he can't testify because when he saw it, he was still a brother-in-law. But an ex-brother-in-law is allowed to testify because they're not related anymore. But blood relatives, once you're a relative, that's it. Always a relative.
What's wrong if they saw it, then they got divorced, and then
they have to be close for safe and be cautious.
They still use this laws in the betting nowadays, or?
Today there's no capital punishment, there's no malchus, okay? In monetary laws, sometimes they use them, sometimes they don't. It depends what they're actually doing. If they're trying to figure out a compromise, they would use them. If they're not, they wouldn't use them. But Bezdin will take into consideration what a woman says. you know, as not as a witness as much as information. On Torah law, I mean, if you don't have kosher witnesses, you don't get anywhere. By Kedushin, yeah, or by a get, where you need kosher witnesses, they're not going to use relatives, they're not going to use women, they're not going to use kids, they're not going to use anybody that, you know, is not a kosher witness. If they're not Shemir Shabbos, they're not kosher witnesses. You know, there have to be certain definitions of what a witness is. Two brothers can't be witnesses under a chuppah. Two brothers-in-law can't. Two cousins can't. I mean, chatchili, you try even distant relatives, you don't do.
So you can't have your family under the chuppah.
You can have them under the chuppah, they can't testify.
Yeah.
They can't be a witness.
At a wedding.
Right. They can't be a witness. Because they're not kosher witnesses, they're relatives.
And also, they're not Shomer Shabbat either.
What?
You don't have to be Shomer Shabbat.
Yeah, so if you have, what happens if your brother is?
Then you can't use him.
Because he's a relative.
Yeah.
But he's Shomer Shabbos.
In capital cases, they have to be Shomer Shabbos too.
Sure.
In
capital punishment, they also don't take witnesses under the age of 18. Because you don't know if you reach puberty, the accepted age is 13. But by capital punishment, they'll try to avoid taking witnesses under 18, it says in Shulchan Aruch. Not that they will never do it, but then they'll have to check him out, to make sure that he reached puberty. But otherwise, at 18 already, you assume that they definitely reached it. Yeah?
If there was only one guy, and he saw a woman kill a Shemit, and he was the only guy that saw it, is he allowed to go to a non-Jewish court to testify?
No. A Jew can never, because a Jew is not allowed to testify in a non-Jewish court than another Jew. Unless if they're subpoenaed. Then they have no choice. And even then, it's questionable what they're allowed to say, what they're not allowed to say.
There's a custom on the Ketubah. So many people, they come and they sign
the Chos and Kala.
Not on the Ketubah.
Yeah, but not as witnesses.
Not considered as witnesses.
The witnesses, it says, this name aid. That's it. Then, certain places, the chosin signs, the kallah signs, the father signs, and then by a lot of svadah shiidin, there's a million signatures on the tshuva, front and the back. Yeah, I've seen that done, but they're not signing as witnesses. No, they like to see their names in print. They put the names down, but they're not. If they're doing it as witnesses, they invalidate the whole tshuva.
But I always had in mind this is like part of it, so there is more.
It's not
witnesses.
The witness. It's not, because
it's
then
not.
They're going to make everything possible. They're going to make everything non-kosher if they're signing as witnesses, because they're all relatives.
Distant of relatives is not considered is the best. Like third, fourth is okay.
Alpidin, it should be very far, even the distant relatives. But Shani B'Shani is Alpidin B'Diavid Kosher.
Mm-hmm. Second
cousins. No, Shani B'Shani is more than second cousins. It could be first cousin once removed is kosher, second cousins would be kosher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's Rishin, there's Sheni, there's Shlishi. Then you have Sheni B'Shlishi, Shlishi B'Rishin, B'Rishin, you know.
And
why do you need witnesses for marriage anyway?
They make the marriage happen.
For Ketubah or?
Not to Ketubah so much. For the ring giving. Oriyat Mekudesh is there. I just had this Saturday night in my house. There was a very firm man and woman. They realized the ksuba wasn't kosher, and the witnesses for the ring giving weren't kosher. Came to my house Saturday night. They brought along two witnesses, and in 5 minutes, I didn't do a chuppah. They rewrote the ksuba. We did the kedushin. It was over.
How do you know they won?
He told me he knows who the witnesses were. They weren't kosher.
So why did he use them anyway?
Huh?
Why did he use them anyway?
He wasn't so frum then.
Oh.
Rabbi, no party?
No party. Sorry. Yeah, that we did, of course.
Some schnapps.
Yeah, that of course. And that's before, after, and during. I mean, but the party.
So you had to get two witnesses.
Does it groom have to?
They brought two witnesses.
Oh,
technically, I told him he could bring one because I could be the second witness. But he brought two.
Does the groom have to fast?
Shabbos.
Huh?
Shabbos.
Okay.
Shabbos suah. It wasn't a wedding. No, not this. This is not the.
Is there any difference if one brother kills another brother? He still has to run regardless of his relative.
We're going to learn soon in the Gemara, and we'll get there today. If a son can kill his father, mm-hmm. if his father is the murderer. Mm-hmm. Yaakov's the father, okay? Yaakov killed Reuven by mistake. Right? Can Shimon kill his father? Shimon's the Goyal Adam. Can Shimon kill his father? Or can Reuven's son kill his grandfather? That's coming up before the mission even. I don't think we'll get to it today, though. But
what happens with the kids if the ketubah is not kosher?
Nothing.
They are kosher?
Kosher kids. Just don't eat them. But they're kosher. Kids are kosher.
Are we learning if a man gives a ring to a woman and any manipulation and it's not?
Not if there's no witnesses. Even if there's one witness saying Cheshish in the Kedushin, there's not even a doubt of a Kedushin. Remember, we learned, I'll remind you what we learned. Yeah. We learned that there's two types of witnesses. There's a witnesses that verify something happened. Mm-hmm. If I lend you $1,000, okay, the purpose of two witnesses is that in case you deny it, I have proof. But if you agree and I agree, what do we don't, I mean, later I come to you and say, pay me up to $1,000. You say, yeah, I owe you $1,000. You don't need witnesses, right? Certain witnesses make it happen. For instance, if a man gives a lady a ring and says, nobody's around. He agrees it happened. She agrees it happened. There's no question it happened, right? Everybody agrees it happened. They're not married. There's no adultery. There's nothing. She's not married. Why? Because the witnesses make it happen. There's no witnesses, it didn't happen. Halacha, it didn't happen. Oh, what do you mean it didn't happen? It happened. Halacha agreed with the other witnesses, it didn't happen.
So why is there such a concern? Let's say, for example, by Purim, if you give yourself a note to a woman.
Because maybe somebody was watching it and somebody saw it, and you know.
You know, if there wasn't, would you give it to
them? Yeah, but how do you know there's always going to make sure nobody's around? Can't, it's hard.